Terra's Glory. It would naturally have been very difficult to move any sizable elements of the 20th Legion's fleet into the Volder system without being detected. That is not to say that it would have been impossible. One of the advantages of having tech priests like Majos Kunitax around was that they knew the Imperium's standard sensor tech that Volder had been issued with following compliance, and therefore the best ways around it. But there was no need. We were not intending to launch a large-scale operation. We used a single Vagabond-class trader, the Argolisa, and drifted quietly into the system along with the regular shipping traffic. Had we been boarded by the local officials, then they would have received something of a shock, for as well as the usual complement of a captain, a handful of officers and mates, and a crew of indentured voidborn and mind-wiped servitors, the Argolisa also boasted 6 legionnaires, a Magos of Mars, and a Primarch who was as yet unknown to the Imperium at large. Luckily for everyone concerned, mainly the locals, no such boarding action took place, and our ident codes were sufficient to see us take up a berth at one of the orbital platforms. We did not have long to wait before we were hailed.
"Vagabond Argolisa, this is Captain Lanessra of Terra's Glory," the vox crackled. "Permission requested to dock with you for transference of cargo."
"Terra's Glory, this is the Argolisa," Captain Uhara replied crisply.
As captain of a support vessel, she was not privy to my true identity, but she was well aware that a lord of the 20th Legion stood at her shoulder, and I had no doubt she wanted to impress.
"What word do you have for us?"
"Argolisa, the word is Adelphos."
Uhara nodded.
"Confirm, Terra's Glory. You have permission to dock."
She snapped the vox off and snorted.
"Terra's Glory, indeed. A fancy name for something that could be swatted out of the sky by a rogue avian."
I glanced at the scope. The Terra's Glory was indeed a small cargo lighter, suitable for little more than shuttle runs from orbit to surface. More importantly, the captain was an operative with local knowledge upon which we could draw. "It will serve."
"I wonder how many ships called Terra's Glory there are in the galaxy," mused Ortolan Skor.
He was the usual prime of the headhunter team I'd commanded on Trulla, but competent and indeed brutally efficient though he was in this role, I had an idea his talents might be better employed elsewhere. Skor was not well suited to subduing his own strong personality in the interests of subtlety or subterfuge, so I was minded to exploit those traits and let him be his own person. The day would come, before too long, when the 20th Legion would need to finally announce itself to the galaxy at large, even if I did not yet reveal myself. Skor, like Dinat, could be one of our faces to our brother legions, an easily recognisable, forcible soul, and a handy counterpoint to any accusations of deliberate evasiveness in terms of our personnel or appearance.
"Perhaps we should adopt the name for all our craft," Dersius joked. "Can you imagine the confusion in an enemy fleet if every vessel they faced appeared to have the same designation?"
The Terra's Glory was coming alongside, and it adjusted its position with delicate thruster jets before extending its docking corridor. A faint thump indicated that the magnetic seals had affixed, and a green light flashed to show our sensors had detected a fully pressurized, breathable atmosphere on the other side. Not that it would have mattered to us, since our armour was fully capable of sustaining us in hard vacuum or toxic atmosphere for hours, but it was an indication that the captain of the Terra's Glory had not been overcome by foolhardy dreams of piracy. We moved to the docking bay at speed, but without undue haste. A lighter taking on cargo from a trader vessel would expect to be in place for some time, as items were moved and checked, bills of lading verified, appropriate payments cleared, and so forth. Should anyone have been watching us, a particularly brief docking would be notable, and might lead to further attention. Secrecy was not paramount here, but it was desirable. Besides, methods and personnel should not ideally be stress-tested for the first time under critical conditions. Captain Lanessra of the Terra's Glory was tall and wiry, of a build common to the humans native of the Volder system, and clad in flowing robes of dark purple, in which glinted threads of vermilion. I knew these were a local custom, by which an individual's heritage and rank was denoted, and that judging by the pattern and frequency of the threads, the person I was facing would have traditionally been near the bottom of the class system. From such humble origins do the 20th Legion find many of our operatives. Rank and connections have their uses, there is no doubt about that, but all too often rank and connections come with pre-existing hubris. Offer a member of the elite an opportunity to serve, and they will weigh it minutely to see in what manner it will benefit them, and may well decide at a critical point that actually they're happy with their life as it is. Offer an opportunity to serve to someone at the bottom of the social pile, give them a cause to believe in and the chance to be part of something greater than their own miserable circumstances, and they will seize it eagerly, particularly if by so doing they can gain things they otherwise would have lacked. Humans like to feel special. If society does not view them as special, then giving them an important secret of which they feel a part will fulfill that need, and so long as it makes them feel special, they will keep that secret. A rogue trader might look down their nose at the lighter captain, but if the lighter captain knows they are secretly serving the Legiones Astartes and the rogue trader is not, they will view themselves as the rogue trader's equal. Manezra's eyes widened as the hatch opened, and they came face to face with 7 legionnaires. The headhunters wore darkened stealth armour, and it was not immediately obvious to which legion they belonged, but Akil, Gukul, and I were unarmoured. Nonetheless, despite the fact I was using my gift to conceal the full nature of my identity, given our size and companions, our nature could not be in doubt.
"Greetings," Ortolan Skor said through his helm. "I am Alpharius."
"Lords," Lenezra said with a bow,
"I am honoured to serve."
They stepped back, and we entered the lighter. It was indeed small, although perfectly capable of transporting the 7 of us with room to spare. The rest of the space was filled by standard-issue transport crates containing low-grade foodstuffs, borne over from the Argolisa by servitors. After all, the Terra's glory needed something to show for its jaunt into orbit. When the last crate had been placed, and the last servitor had departed, Lenezra sealed the hatchway behind us with a grinding of machinery and bowed again.
"Your orders, Lord Alpharius."
"To the surface," Skor instructed them,
his voice distorted by his helmet speakers.
"A landing area within Prime City, but without extensive security."
Lenezra nodded with a satisfied smile.
"I know just the place, lords. You can't run a vessel like this without knowing your way around the tariff hounds."
They turned and headed for the cockpit without any further words, and a few moments later I felt the slight shift of the deck beneath us as the docking clamps released and we began to drift. Lenezra nudged us clear of the great dark flank of the Argolisa with the thrusters. It was a small vessel by the standards of the Imperium, but still a leviathan when compared to the lighter, and then engaged the main drive to take us down towards the blue-grey orb of Volda Beta below. The ship and shuttle traffic coming and going from a world like Volda Beta, a thriving production hub for the Imperium, can seem almost impenetrably dense when viewed from a cogitator relay. The sheer volume of craft is far greater than a human mind can pass and comprehend all at once, leading to the necessity for it to be broken down by systems and practices, allowing everything to be dealt with and processed individually at the correct time. When attempting to penetrate such a system, the perspective is very different. Then, no matter the size of the vessel in which you are travelling, it never feels like there is enough cover around you in the form of other craft. The nagging voice in the back of your head persists, insisting your chosen vessel is too big and therefore too noticeable, or too small and so obviously suspicious. Broadcast an ident, and you surrender yourself to the system. Fly dark, and your deception is obvious to any that see you. When I was penetrating the Imperial Palace's security, I was relying only on myself. Now I relied on others. Those I'd trusted and trained, or those they had in turn trusted and trained, and so on. At what point in that tenuous web should errors occur? Where did someone miss something? I would never know until it went wrong. Intelligent and perceptive though I am, and rational enough not to jump at shadows, I am familiar enough with human and even transhuman nature to know that no one is infallible. The greater the complexity and subtlety with which we operated, the greater margin for error there was. Although that in turn meant that every success spoke most highly of my legion. Nonetheless, whenever I embarked on such clandestine operations, it was not without a moment's longing for the simplicity of direct combat. Although I took great satisfaction in many threads coming together to make a whole, especially when some or all of those threads had not directly been instigated by me, thereby vindicating my decisions with regard to my appointments, there was a thrill in matching yourself against another that cannot be found any other way. The knowledge that everything in this moment is dependent on you. I am a skilled fighter, and even Valdor did not outmatch me, although that contest was so brief that no particularly telling conclusions can be drawn from it. I could have engaged in a more direct manner of war, and taken the fight directly to whatever enemy my legion and I faced. We would have excelled. It was what we were created for, after all. We might well have even enjoyed it. However, the Imperium had enough legions who fought in that manner. My 20th would only engage when we could do most damage, and when the enemy was at their most vulnerable. A coward's approach, it might be thought. But efficiency is all too often seen as cowardice by those who lack its virtue. There would be no such combat on this mission, and so we trusted ourselves to subterfuge. The headhunters would execute their targets in a night of finely focused but bloody retribution against those who dared question the Emperor's glory, and Gukul and I would seek out these rumours regarding the being who might be my brother. We would come and go as spirits, leaving few the wiser as to our presence, and none with any knowledge of our true nature or purpose. I am rarely wrong. When I am, it is memorable. Other legions, I believe, view it as offensive that my legion take on not just my appearance when dealing with outsiders, but also my name. They think my warriors are claiming an identity above themselves, that they are not just being secretive, but in taking the name of their Primarch, are in some ways seeking an authority which they do not deserve. This could not be further from the truth. My name is not special. It is not some unique, valuable commodity to be hoarded. We are not the Lunar Wolves, where Horus Axemand must be known as Little Horus to ensure that his position below Horus Lupercal is known to all. My name can be used by any of my legion. An Alpha Legionnaire calling themselves Alpharius means one thing and one thing only. My identity is unimportant. Only my function matters.